Hey everybody, and welcome to Team Fight Talk Show. I am Doa. With me, as always, is Frodan, and I should say I'm back. Also, it's been a while, but I'm happy to be back. And with us is our very special guest, fresh off a final lobby appearance at Worlds. It's Esha from the Oceania region. How you doing, man?
Hey Doa, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, just woke up and I'm kind of okay. Tired, but yeah, I'm doing well.
All right, well, good morning. I'm glad you could wake up to be here with us. Frodan, how awake are you? I feel like we're all still kind of waking up after the world's time zones.
I'm doing okay. You know, it's been a while since I've reset my sleep schedule as hard as it did, just basically going nocturnal for a day, for a few days, rather. But, you know, Worlds was super fun, and it was just one of the best tournaments of the year. I do wish they could be offline and LAN. You know, I look forward to the day where TFT LAN can finally happen.
Seriously.
Instead of everyone just kind of playing remotely. But yeah, overall, it was a great weekend, man. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, and we will talk about it a lot. We've got a lot to go through today. And this is the first show where we get to talk about Set 6 as well. That's right. We don't have a ton of information. I'm sure there will be more soon, but we have a little bit of information we can talk about via a developer update. But first, let's talk to our guest, Esha. Now, a lot of people know you as a pretty popular streamer. You're a fairly entertaining individual. But not a lot of people knew you for high-level play. I know. People sometimes accuse you even of being a for-fun streamer. Well, or for-fun player. Everyone's a for-fun streamer. But I think we can put the for-fun player thing to rest. You did really well at Worlds. So what was it like? Sort of like putting all the doubters to sleep, as it were.
Oh, well, it felt great, you know, like, before I actually made it to Worlds, I feel like I wasn't the best player. People weren't really, like, thinking that I was going to do well at Worlds, probably, like, the underdog going into the tournament, and with just, like, a lot of practice with certain people, certain individuals, I stepped up, and I shut up all the haters and the doubters.
Yeah, exactly, and you even had to play an extra day to do it. And you crushed it the first day. You took first in the play-ins. Like, tell me how that feels for a second, because you're the only representative from Oceania, and you have to play in the play-ins. So do you feel like you almost had to, like, prove again that you deserve to be there?
Well, like, before the first day, like, I was shaking. Like, you know, this is the world stage. I'm against some of the best players in the world. And, I don't know, just, like, after the first day, when I actually played really consistently and went first, I gained a lot of confidence and I felt a lot better. I was like, maybe I actually might, you know, deserve to be here. And
so you didn't think you deserved to be there before that, really?
Well, like, compared to the other players, and like the level that they were, I kind of like doubted myself. I didn't have much confidence.
I thought, wow,
you know, maybe I am maybe like the underdog here, and maybe if I like luck it out, then I'll get past day one. Because I honestly never expected to make it to the final day.
In hindsight, do you think that you lucked out, or do you feel like you really, you know, that you felt like you deserved that, you know, top eight, that fifth place at Worlds? Like, do you really feel fifth best player in the world type caliber play right now?
Well, I think I smashed the tournament. Like, I think overall, I was probably the most consistent player with, like, the most consistent scores. So, yeah, after the tournament, I felt like, yeah, I kind of do belong here. And I think it's just, like, the play-ins actually really helped me adjust to the tournament, like, tempo. And then that gave me, like, the extra day to, you know, whereas, like, some players only got to play one day, and then they either got knocked out or they made it to the next day.
So, yeah.
Sure. I want to ask about the preparation. You know, a lot of people are helping you both on and off stream. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, who was helping you and what they were doing specifically to get you prepared?
Oh, okay. So especially one individual. I'm sure you guys know him, Jigglypuff King. He actually, like, sat me down and, like, went through, like, the way I play. He took, like, snapshots of, like, certain spots that I was in. And then he'd ask me, like, you know, why would you roll here? Like, what are you thinking here? So he literally wrote me a PowerPoint presentation.
Wow.
Like, 14 slides. He wrote down, like, all the mistakes I'm making, all the things I should be doing. He got data from, like, the top Chinese players. He analyzed players. He wrote down, like, certain like positioning habits that each player has, which really helped me in the long run. And I had a lot of VOD reviewing with a lot of my OCE friends, especially Raza, who was last year's world's representative at for OCE. And yeah, it was mainly more VOD reviewing than actually playing.
I felt like
playing on solo queue wouldn't really help me practice much.
Yeah, you might even get in a situation where you're like ingraining bad habits too. That's kind of one of the things I think that's happened. Is sometimes people, and you see this across a lot of games, right? Where sometimes people just grind games endlessly. And like there is a point where that stops helping and can even start hurting. But I'm curious, like what would you say is the percentage breakdown of like playing versus reviewing, studying, that kind of stuff?
Well, if you're playing in scrims, I think it could be around like 50-50. Whereas if it's like solo queue to reviewing, it's probably like 10 to 90.
Wow. Okay. Cool. That's amazing. So like that's, would you say, would do you think based on like what you know of other players' preparation that you were like vastly more prepared than a lot of the other players in the tournament? Or would you say from what you've heard, it's about the same?
Oh, so I actually, they organized scrims for like 3 days-ish.
Yeah.
And I think I missed 2 of them. Because I fell asleep. Because the timing was really bad. Because the EU and like NA times are really weird compared to OCE. So I was never awake for any of the scrims. So I only got to play in one of the scrims. But I think that scrim was really helpful to like show me like what the tempo kind of was like in like a world's lobby.
Cool. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about worlds later in the show, just like day by day. But I did have one final question as the intro. Esha, if you did win Worlds, I believe there was an obligation that you promised the rest of the internet that you would do. Were you actually going to go through with it? I just want to know out of my own curiosity.
Oh, no.
Were you actually going to go through with it?
I mean, I'm not a flaker, so I probably would have just done it and gotten it over and done with, because if I didn't do it, then my chat would never forgive me. I think the whole community wouldn't forgive me.
It's okay. I don't think you'd have a chat or a community to worry about after that if it had happened anyway. So no problem there.
All right. That was my last question. We can move on.
Okay. Well, on that note, and if you don't know what we're talking about, well, you know.
Don't worry about it. Don't
Google
worry.
It. Yeah. If you know, you know. We'll leave it at that. But let's talk about set 6. All right. It's Gadgets and Gizmos, I believe, is the name of the title. We got the title at Worlds. We didn't really get much more info. Luckily, there was a developer drop that told us a little bit more about what's coming in set 6, namely the set mechanic. It is Hextech Augments. And this sounds really neat. You'll get these at different points throughout the game, apparently. There's a whole bunch of them. There's a ton of them. And they all do various things to different parts of your board. So we've got different examples there. And as you can see on the screen, too, we've got like a little sneak peek of some of the champions that are in the set. And like right away for me, Blitzcrank pops out. He's back. I wonder what his ability is. But either way, I'm happy. That's one of my favorite champions in League of Legends. So happy to see that. But let's talk about the Hextech Augments. Frodan, you saw kind of the list that was shown in that dev update. Anything stand out to you there?
Yeah, so there's a few bullet points that came up, such as, for example, all ranged champions with an augment will have 2 additional hex ranges, which is equivalent to the Radiant RFC right now, which is kind of wild to think about. Like every ranged champion period gets that buff. There's like the fact that you can level to 10. There's like which opponent you'll face during each combat. I already know that. It's whichever opponent I didn't position for, so I don't know why that's going to be an augment. You gain 1 gold and a free reroll every single time. So there's a lot of really interesting ones in particular. It feels like a mismatch, like a mixed bag of galaxies meets kind of like the Lucky Lantern aspect of stuff with Radiant Armory. So it looks like they're fusing a bunch of different like mechanics that they had in the past and putting it into the augment stuff. I'm not entirely sure like anything beyond that. All I know is that historically, the more you've added to this, becomes harder to balance because surely 1 or 2 of them are going to be glaringly more powerful than the others. And then, you know, Riot's going to have a handful on their plate. So I would really like it if they started off a little bit small and then added more like the galaxies over time, as opposed to come out with like 20 like shadow items, right? And have to balance all of them because that's just a headache.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how impactful they all are versus like how often you get a chance to get the one you would prefer to get. Esha, like, what's your first like knee jerk reaction to the mechanic?
That looks crazy. Honestly, I feel like this set is gonna be wild. Just like seeing like what Freden just talked about, the double hex range on every range unit, being able to see who you're gonna verse next, like seeing the future. I haven't honestly really looked much into the augments because I was too busy with worlds, but yeah, this set looks like something else. It looks like set one.
So let me tell you a little bit about like some of the other ones they mentioned. So the other ones they mentioned is a unit with an item attached to them gets an extra 200 HP and 20 attack damage. So almost like a little cybernetics buff for your whole team, basically. There's one where you get an armory that offers you one of four of the Ornn items from set four, if you remember those. Yeah, there's one that lets you go to level 10. There's one that, this is the one that seems kind of crazy to me, is that there's one where when you lose a round, you get an extra gold and you get a free reroll. And that's the one where I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds absolutely nutty. And like, all of this stuff is like preview. Maybe none of these even make it into the set. We'll find out when PvE hits eventually. But like, yeah, some of these sound a little bit crazy.
Get 3 gold equivalent every single time you lose. Open streak or open forders are going to have a field day. China meta is going to be crazy in that.
All the one costs will have to be trash for that to like for that to work, you know?
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
I don't know.
I mean, Milk would have loved this playing playing this on Worlds, but
yeah, sure, I mean, it certainly like, would help that.
One of the things that people like kind of mislabel Milk is that some people have the impression that he likes rerolling. I think Milk really doesn't like rerolling. He rerolls because he often thinks that's like the best thing to do in a tournament, especially since how consistent it is. Mm. But in his ideal world, no one would really be going like 20 at 20 clutch, for example. So yes, as much as Milk would have succeeded in a format like this, I feel like he can succeed in any format, and he would much prefer that reroll doesn't really exist in his current form.
Ultimately, you just got to play with, you know, what works when it comes to a tournament situation. You know, if you want to win, you got to play what you think is best, right? So can't fault anyone for doing that. But yeah, these Hextech augments sound really interesting. I kind of wonder, because they've said that there's going to be a ton of them. So I'm wondering if it's going to be an amount to a degree that the balance is mitigated a little bit that way, because the likelihood of seeing a specific one or like playing around a specific one is less possible. Like I'm saying, you can't set your team up for a specific augment. You more have to kind of react to what you get. So in that sense, I could see it, you know, being broad enough that the balance might be easier. But it is, I mean, props to the TFT team for continuing to give themselves extreme challenges of balance with every set, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Shadow items still seem like the hardest thing to me, but we'll see how this goes. I'm curious, Esha, like if you could invent a Hextech augment, what would it do? Give me the Esha augment.
If I could build a Hextech augment, I don't know, because I actually didn't play in set one. I don't know if there was a mechanic like this, but I'd like a augment where you can disable someone's items, like a certain unit's items.
Oh, no. Oh, well, do we have a story for you?
Oh, really?
It's actually so funny because it was called Hextech as well.
Yeah. And it was in my opinion, the worst trait of set one, and perhaps the worst trait ever. I know people say Phantom is. People don't like Phantom more.
You're trolling, Esher.
Wait, that was actually a trait.
Yeah, it was.
It
would randomly shoot a bomb at one of your champions that had an item on it and disable that champion's items and anyone around them who had items too. So it was random who it hit. So you had to just like spread your team out. So you like when someone had it, you couldn't really position. You would just spread your team out, and that was your positioning. And like, it just, I don't know. I didn't. Maybe it was because I was worse at the game, but like, It was that and Phantom were the two that were quite divisive.
It felt really unfun because it was basically like a little bit smaller than a Cho'Gath ultimate circle.
It was big, yeah.
Yeah, so like it would hit a group of your units. So if you played like right now, if you play like the Vel'Koz, right, how you have Vel'Koz and Syndra, you like bunch all these units in the corner, and it would hit it. Basically, you only had your frontline A-bomb unit item, and that's it. And then you would fight like that. But it was random, so it was very, very toxic for the game. But I do think that item counterplay in general is interesting. So I do like where your head's
at. Sure. I do think the concept of you know, nerfing an item that someone else has put on their champion is cool. It just has to be done like the right way. And I'm not sure what that right way is, but Hextech as it existed in set one was not it, in my opinion. But yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because that is something that did exist.
I do have you know one about Phantom? About set six. Oh, you
can wait, I gotta ask this first. Do you know about Phantom, Esha?
I heard Phantom was the one where it's like one unit automatic, like randomly on the board goes to 1 HP.
Yeah, it was 100 HP, which basically might as well be 1 HP by the end of the game. But yeah,
that sounds so stupid. Like
it was.
Like if your carry just gets like, or your front line just goes to 100 HP, you're just dead.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah,
doesn't matter how many Warmog you sack. Yep.
Yep. The set one was wild, man. I kind of want to go back and play it again because it was fun. Like it's a set that got us all into it, so it was pretty awesome. But it had some crazy stuff in it. There was a trait where if you got enough of it, your team got 60% dodge too. That was fun.
You can play it though. You just have to download the Chinese mobile.
That's true.
Because they have set one.
I need to figure out how to do that.
I wanted to ask, who's going to be your duo partner for set six?
My duo partner, I actually don't know. Because I know a lot of the streamers are going to like already have their duos, and I think half the streamers are going to play solos, and then the other half are just going to play duos with each other. But I don't really have like a close streamer friend that doesn't have a duo partner right now. So the slot is open.
You're looking, LFGF, right?
Yeah, LFGF. LFGF.
All right. Esha is single and ready to mingle with a duo partner. Just putting it out there.
That's right.
All right.
Don't worry about the ping. Well. Should we move on? Should we talk about Worlds? Is there anything else to talk about with set six? We really don't know a lot about it yet.
No, we don't really know too much about it. I will say that I am slightly disappointed that all we got was a title card of it. You know, like I think World Champion is a perfect opportunity to advertise TFT because, you know, let's just be very honest with ourselves. Like the viewership in TFT just gets really high during World Championship, and around it, it's not really that high. So like if you're going to advertise it in a live stream environment, you might as well capitalize on the biggest hype moment in the West, at least. I'm not entirely sure because I don't know, like, say, for example, if China's streaming numbers were, like, offsites. Like, I'm not sure how big TFT is on, like, Afrika, for example. But the idea is that when so many people are watching, that's the perfect time to advertise. And all they did was give this little screen, and they hyped it up in the beginning, like, oh, we'll have some extra news for you at the end of the show after Worlds. And I was just big as blue balls, man. I was very, very upset.
Oh, but they did advertise TFT at in the League Worlds for like 20 seconds. They were like, oh, nice. We will be releasing set six Gizmo and Gadgets. And I was just like,
yeah. But that's it. That's all I said. Same exact thing. They gave the Necro script over to Dash and said, hey, read this exact word. He's like, okay, that's what you pay me to do.
And we're, you know, small baby steps. We're making it. We're getting, yeah. Then they'll kick us out of the client. But I think it's going to, I do know that the viewership for the Chinese language audience and the Korean language audience is much, much bigger than the English language audience right now. Like I know over in Korea, in the internet cafes, TFT is the second biggest game right now behind League, which is crazy because, because there's other huge games like there's various FPSs, things like that over there. FIFA is always really big in the PC Bongs in Korea and the internet cafes. But it's TFT is the second highest game, so it's TFT is huge in Korea and it's huge in China. We just got to get English language people watching it more.
That's so interesting because lots of the top players specifically felt like they took a step back away, right? Most infamously, Bebe quit TFT in the middle of set five, and you know, a lot of other players like also had taken a little bit of a break. I wonder if they're going to come back for set six, though. So, I mean,
I wonder.
That's the thing about TFT. You don't have, when you say you quit TFT, you really mean I'm going to take a break and maybe come back some other time.
Yeah.
The game is like so fundamentally different that if you don't enjoy it now, there's a pretty good chance that eventually down the line, they'll make something you like.
Right. It is a little bit of a concern sometimes in Korea because the player base tends to follow the big streamer decisions pretty closely. But I don't know. We'll see. Because like you said, it's much more temporary in TFT because things change so drastically each set. Yeah. So we'll see. I do know it's huge over there. So I was just talking. I was just at the Riot Korea offices like 2 weeks ago, and they told me that there, and I've checked the numbers, and it's true. So yeah, it's neat, but got to get more people watching it in English as well. But yeah, people said in chat, talk about the traits on the left side of the board. We don't really know what any of them do yet, so...
What do you think Assassin does?
I think it assassinates people. We got that one. What about the other ones? I'm trying to like read it. It's a little bit blurry from we're all leaning towards now.
There's Sniper, which kind of feels like the Ranger equivalent of it. There's Anti-Mage, which I'm not sure what that means. Is it like Demon coming back where like Anti-Mage perhaps steals mana or burns it? There's Mercenary, which last time we know the Mercenary trait from Galaxies was like augments would appear in shops that you would buy, like upgrading Gangplank's altar, for example. So those are some of the things that I see. There's also a couple other ones like
Scrap.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Academy.
Which uses
redeemed. The sounds cool. Yeah, it's got the redeemed icon for now. Yeah.
We'll see. And a lot of people complain about the art. They're like, because Esha was like, this looks like set one. This was supposed to be like alpha preview art.
Yeah.
Like they even said that they were like not done like polishing and skinning everything. Yeah. But they want to have something in for the preview.
I mean, it's basically all the default skins right now if you look at it actually too. So it's like, clearly it's just like they're testing things and throwing the champions in there and all that. That's like the default arena. So yeah, I'm sure we're going to see more of that.
From 2009, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I am.
These look really old and bad resolution, but whatever.
Give me Boom Boom Blitzcrank. The boxer Blitzcrank, you know? Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, thanks. That's that easy. All right. Well, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I don't think we really have a whole lot else to talk about besides set six. I think we're all looking forward to it. We're all ready for a new mechanic. We're all ready for new traits, new everything. So it'll be cool. Set 5 has been a wild ride, and stick around, of course, because we're doing the Golden Spatula Awards later today, which is where we'll celebrate the best and maybe not quite so best of TFT Set 5, but it's going to be a ton of fun. But enough preview there. Hands up. Let's move on to Worlds Talk. That's right. I think we're... Oh, no, wait. Before Worlds, we're going to do an Agree segment, aren't we? It's been a while. I'm back.
That's right.
Yeah, agree. So we only have two questions today because we got a lot to get done. Let's say our first agree segment. TFT Worlds shouldn't include play-ins. Agree? Esha, you can go first.
Wait. TFT Worlds shouldn't include play-ins.
Right. So you have to choose agree or disagree and let us know why think that way. Agree? Why is that?
Yes. I hard agree because the thing is, I feel like Riot didn't really think about this, but if they wanted to get the bottom seed of every region, they have to at least give a certain every single region two slots. And I think me and Nukumaru both they asked us for feedback, what we liked about the tournament setting and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us said, you know, we really don't like the fact that we only have one slot, and the fact that we both had to play in play-ins. So especially if you think about it from a money point of view, 12 players don't have to participate on day one, and they've automatically made, I think it was $3,000. And it's just really unfair to OC and Japan, because we both made it to the last day, yet we only had one slot and we had to play in the play-ins. Whereas other regions all got knocked out on day one. And rather than making a plans like this, they could just add more slots to, say, OCE, Japan. They could give a few slots to C. But yeah, I really disagree with Worlds having a play-ins, especially for TFT.
Yeah,
it's under the pretense that the person that gets the number one seed has definitively proven that they are stronger of a player than the seeds below them. And that's just not true in a game like TFT. Europe's strongest seed was their bottom seed, Shurikane. And Shurikane almost won it all, right? Like, he did such a great job going from play-ins. In fact, here's also another fact just to throw your way. Every single player that qualified for play-ins for groups ended up going to the final day of competition as well.
Yep.
To show you that it doesn't mean that just because you're the bottom seed, you're the weakest player. Now, in a game like League of Legends, Summoner's Rift, yeah, by all means. Sometimes the people that don't get the top seed are probably significantly weaker than the region's number one seed. And that also applies to a couple of other games as well that don't have as much variance. That's not to say that the number one seeds are the weakest, right? Like Robin Song is definitely not like a weak player by any means for North America. But, you know, when people look at it, people would probably evaluate like Milk being as like the overall strongest player out of our list in North America. So these are the kind of things that like I think Riot needs to weigh. So it's an easy agree for me. I don't think they should include planes at all. I think they need to redo the entire format. I think they need to increase the amount of games, increase the amount of hype, because we also had the... It's so weird that they put such a high premium on the Checkmate format because they don't want any dead games towards the end. But we had dead games in the group stages where some players were mathematically eliminated, and they can mess with competitive integrity however they want. You know, they could like, okay, which player do I like want to grief to help? Or like maybe I play for like this $500 extra, but ultimately I can just troll around and like mess up stuff, mess around and just play a meme comp. They need to redo the format in general. So
that's an agree from you too, I'm guessing then.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to easy agree as well. The first reason is because if you make it to Worlds, you make it to Worlds. You shouldn't have to make it to Worlds and then prove that you should be at Worlds again. So the whole idea of play-ins at Worlds, in my opinion, for something like TFT, just doesn't make sense. I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of like what it communicates, that the top seed from a region like Oceania is somehow inferior to a top seed from a different region. Because clearly that's not true on results. And I mean, look at Japan. Japan has made it, has gotten one seed every time, but they have made it to the final lobby every time as well. So I think there's clearly some issues with the number of seeds, with the format and all that. I think you need to have at least 32 players in Worlds as well. Having this amount of players, I think, is one of the reasons that we ended up having play-ins, because we had this kind of like odd number where we could have three groups, but it wasn't even, you know, in the end. So I think if you're not going to do some sort of convoluted round robin thing because of that, you just go up to 32 players and you just run four lobbies and you run like multiple days where you move people around, you know? Because it's like I said at the beginning, just like you shouldn't have to like reprove that you should be at Worlds. You know, you make it to Worlds, you make it to Worlds. That's what I think. So yeah, easy agree for me.
Chat agrees as well. Actually, I'm kind of shocked that it's as it's only like 85%. I wonder how many, what the people who vote no, are they trolling or do they actually have a legitimate counterpoint to it?
I wonder. It's interesting. Second one, though. Yeah, let's move on to our second agree question. The final patch of a set shouldn't be a for fun, shouldn't have for fun changes. Esha, agree?
I actually disagree. Because, wait, the question is, the final patch of a set shouldn't have for fun changes.
Yeah, the final set should not have for fun changes.
No, I actually think the final patch should have for fun changes, because towards the end of the set, like, no one really has anything to play for and no one really cares. And I mean, just for me personally, I prefer that it's for fun so I can just enjoy the set like as it was, because I don't care about ladder anymore. I'm just playing for fun. So I think the for fun changes are actually not bad.
We actually haven't even talked about the four fun changes. So,
yeah, we got to do that.
So, for example, like right now at 5-1, you get a Radiant Armory number 2. And so even though, they've tuned up Draconic, they've actually tuned up the Radiant Blessing. So there's a lot more random crazy power spikes, like Force of Natures that appear out of the Radiant Blessings, the Stimmies. And funny enough, the second Radiant Armory almost feels like it's not necessarily a four fun change, because it smooths out the variance of the first Radiant Army so you don't get screwed by it. A lot of times you're like, you know, you just get the items that you have, and then you have, let's say you're playing like the AD tree and you get offered almost entirely AP items with like one semi-pickable thing. It does feel like really bad to be behind that way. And it's a little bit too late to pivot in that sense, unless you're playing like, you know, the Lucian Vel'Koz hybrid tree that you can easily flex between AD AP and hybridize your damage. But the second Radiant Army is actually kind of lit, so I think that people really enjoy it so far. The four fun changes aren't really that bad. I do think Draconic's like way overtuned at the moment, but it just could be that it's day one and people aren't punishing it because no one really cares, like Esha says. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been good. And ultimately, this is a video game, and we should be having fun. And I definitely feel like a lot of people could relax a little more in TFT and not sweat as hard. So this is a disagree for me as well. I think we should have fun. In a video game. Controversial opinion.
It's a disagree for me too. It's pretty easy. Like, I mean, I agree with what Esha said. After Worlds is done, you know, ladder snapshots don't really matter. Players are playing for pride, and you're gonna have the PBE for the next setup pretty soon too. So a lot of players are gonna want to go play that and get ready for the next set. So why not make the ladder, you know, more fun? Why not make it crazier and just kind of go all out? Like, I think it's a way to sort of really kind of celebrate the set mechanic before it's gone, because we don't know when or if something like this is going to come back again. So yeah, I love it. I think it's great. excuse me. I think it's fun that they sort of take what we've been doing in the set and sort of like blow it into like the next, into like a nuclear level, basically. So I think it's cool. I wouldn't even mind three Radiant Armories. Like, give me one at like 2.5 too. Let's go, you know, let's make it really crazy. I don't think these changes are for fun enough. Let's go to the next.
I'm down. You make three Bloodthirsters, and then you get a super Radiant Bloodthirster, right?
Yes, it's like exactly.
A two-star Bloodthirster. Okay.
And it needs two champions to hold it. So you have to put them next to each other. And it'd be great. Yep. Yeah. Easy disagree for me. I think it's awesome that we have for fun changes. I think that's great. It's a trend. I want to have it continue for sure. So there you go. Only to agree. Questions today. Chat also disagrees that there
pretty
shouldn't
easy
be
ones.
Yeah, it is. We honestly, our ones today were pretty, I was a little bit surprised with the first one. I thought that would be more of a divisive topic, but these ended up both being kind of one-sided. Who are those people? Who are the 17% of chat who thinks there shouldn't be for fun changes?
It's probably just the people who care about like ladder at the end when they have like goals to like hit a certain rank before the set ends.
Yeah. It's the same people who just bet against predictions. You know, they're like, they're such Twitch chat fiends that they're so used to gambling their channel points away that they have to pick the other side because it's the maximum channel point opportunity.
Oh, that
upside. Yeah.
There you go. Brilliant.
Degens.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about Worlds. Here we go. This was day one. This is the play-ins. And Esha, yeah, check this out. You in Japan, the two regions that had one representative ended up taking first place in the lobby. So tell us about that day a little bit. Like, what was that experience? You said you were really nervous coming into it, but how did it sort of change over the course of the day?
Okay, so first day, I saw my lobby, and people kept telling me, like, oh, dude, your lobby is messed up. Like, you know, you've got, like, these cracked players. But honestly, no flame. It was actually, like, a lobby of six people, not eight. As you can see, like, the bot two.
Yeah. You're right.
They didn't really perform. Like, every time I saw their board, I didn't even bother scouting them because, like, their boards were just so weak. But I was actually really scared of Shurikane and Spencer. And I heard that Incomplete was also, like, a beast. But I just, like, the only thing I had in mind was, like, okay, I need to grief Spencer, and I can't let this guy play Kled every game. So after game one, Spencer went first. I was like, all right, it's my turn to play Kled. And then I went sixth with it, and I was kind of embarrassed. I was like, maybe, like, you know, if I played Kled, I could go first with it. And then after that, I was just like, I'll just stick to my roots. I'll just play, you know, my AP starts, my, like, heavy top fours. I actually never played for first on the first 2 days. I always just, like, rolled to zero on eight, played consistently, and... yeah, thanks to the two OKH businesses at the bottom of the tournament, I pulled out like top twos and top threes quite easily.
It's so interesting because, you know, I think in hindsight, yeah, like Xenia and Luli looked pretty weak. I was actually kind of shocked myself to see like how big the gap was. I knew that they were, well, okay, for Luli in particular, it was kind of interesting because he was the player that got in by being the most consistent player from China. So that was,
yeah, that was surprising. Yeah.
And honestly, he made a couple plays I think were really good. So like maybe his eighth places were just really bad luck, or maybe he just didn't get adjusted to the lobby tempo or whatever. But for Xenia though, he looked really far behind. And then I already heard like whispers, cause I know like Milk and Collis, for example, was trying his hardest to not just straight up flame, hard flame Xenia every single time his name appeared on screen. He's like, bro, why is this guy even in Worlds? You know, that's like kind of his attitude. Every time Xenia was on screen, I was like, oh God. Ugh. But, you know, outside of that, I was pretty shocked that Luli didn't perform. But, I mean, the other three China players did really well. So
yeah,
maybe it was just an anomaly.
Maybe. I mean, the other two Chinese players did make it quite deep in the tournament, obviously, in terms of taking first and second. That's about as deep as it gets. Yeah. Definitely. They made up for last year, basically. Mm-hmm. Or last set, rather. For sure. But yeah, it's a... So, after day one, when you were able to take first, like, did that make it just easy going to day number two? Did it lower the nerves at all? You had to feel, like, a little bit more comfortable.
Oh, I felt a lot more confident. I was like... You know, if I just keep doing like what I'm doing, I could probably just make it to, you know, the final day. And that's exactly what I did on day two. Besides the first game, I took the fastest eighth. The cameraman never showed me, so no one saw my spot. But I just got more dog the first game. And then I realized that these players in the second lobby weren't too flexible. Like, they had certain comps that they tried to go for every game. And then I just played the comps that they didn't play. And then I just found myself hitting, like, every single time I rolled on 8 or 7. And day 1 really helped a lot. Because I got used to, like, playing aggressively. And those aggressive, like, starts just led me to, like, easy top 4s.
All right. Let's take a look at... there's day 2 again, of course, that you made it through that one as well. So... What would you say was the biggest thing you noticed from the other regions that made you sort of had to like reevaluate on the fly as far as like your plans went?
Well, the other regions, I realized that they, like after playing against China and Korea on the first day, this lobby was a lot more greedy. They like tried to go fast 8 more. They didn't roll as much on 7. And this lobby felt significantly stronger because I felt like all 8 players were really strong. And every single like round, I was like on my feet, you know, like, do I have to scout against this guy? What is this guy playing? Because like the tempo was a lot faster. I had to roll more on 7. I had to like manage my econ if I had like a bad start. Couldn't just play aggressively for no reason. Especially Shurkane. Shurkane was probably the scariest player on day 2. Because his early game was really strong, along with his like mid game. But his late game wasn't that strong, but he was a pretty scary player.
You played against him in three separate days of competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's funny because you two seem to be kind of like, you know, stepped in the same stride. Your point totals were almost the same like across all 3 days. So it felt like, you know, you two were rivals in some way. I'm not sure if that was something that you felt, but I was kind of picking up on that a little bit, just how, like, how close your scores was every single day.
Yeah, it was really close between me and Shurkane. I think, yeah, we probably have, like, a very similar playstyle. We try to play aggressive early, play, like, a decent mid, and then just pray that we hit on 8.
Slow bleed at a late game.
Yeah, slowly bleed out.
Top three stars. Yeah. Chase 3 stars and pray, yeah.
Fair enough. Let's take a look at day 3. So day 3, you got to take a break, basically. You didn't have to play day 3 at least, but when you were watching this lobby, or how much did you watch this lobby and kind of use that as sort of a prep day for the finals?
Oh, I actually watched the whole thing.
Okay.
And I actually played with Mbappe on day 1. And I realized that he's the biggest, like, first or eighth player. He never plays for top 4. He always greets 8. He only plays, like, the strongest cap boards. He doesn't play for the stage he's on. He plays for, like, his late game. So he tries to, like, go for perfect items every time. And, yeah, seeing him go first on this day, along with Nukomaru, because I know that Nukomaru is not very flexible. He only plays Draven and Aphelios. So I'm actually surprised that this lobby didn't really contest him on Aphelios. And I watched Kidux and Hwanmi. They were really strong players. But I'm really surprised that Dudu and Robin didn't make it on this day. Because my top 4 was Kidux, Dudu, Robin, and Hwanmi.
Okay.
And only 2 of them made it.
Well, this ended up being like, I think I called it like the closest day of TFT we've ever seen in competition, because it was like the points, it doesn't look like that in the final score, but if I remember right, the points were like almost, there was like, what, 4 or 3 or 4 points separating like second through eighth after like game three or something, game four.
This last lobby determined everything. Like, even though you look at these point totals, they could have easily been a different top four.
Totally.
Nesha was describing. And also, you know, to what you said, like, I'm surprised not many more people contested Nukumaru. Did you see this man hit Aphelios 2 at 3-2? Like, how can you contest him doing that?
No, so what happened was I hit on day 2. I hit on 3-6. So, like, I natural done Aphelios on level 5. And then the lobby just okayed business me. They gave me a Aphelios with a chain on the carousel. And I had a Nico on bench. Oh. And then I was like, okay, like, this is the earliest 4-star, like, 2-star 4-cost unit. And then this guy just, like, he's an Aphelios 1-trick. And he just whips out an Aphelios 2 on 3-2, and I was like, oh, it's over. Like, he's actually the Aphelios Whisperer.
It's true. And it's also, the other side was pretty ugly. We watched Nukumaru try to play a Vel'Koz A-bomb comp, and man, he just looked lost. And I was like, I think this is, like, the easiest top tier comp in the game, man. Like, and you look really lost. It's pretty simple once you just get down the basics. So I was pretty shocked by that in particular, because I think Aphelios is way harder because it requires a lot more nuance of like understanding what you can and can't get away with, and your timings change every single game. So I was pretty shocked by that. But either way, Nukumaru, when he was hitting, I mean, he was executing very well.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the final day of Worlds. So here's how it all shook out in the end. Obviously, Wanmi won it. C2 took second. Delicious Milk fourth. Third, rather, sure came fourth. And you ended up in fifth there, too. So that last day, Nukumaru, I think that was the day he tried to play that Vel'Koz comp. He kind of fell off pretty hard. But take us through this final day. Like, what was sort of the vibe? Like, how did your thoughts change between game one, game two, all that kind of stuff? Like, I just want to kind of hear about like your breakdown of your experience with this final day, because it was intense. This was another pretty close lobby.
Yeah, so going into this lobby, I was like, okay, this is probably like one of the strongest lobbies like I've seen. And I got really hyped up. I was really confident because like everyone was like cheering me on, FB touchdowny, let's go Milk, let's go Esha. I got really excited. I decided to, rather than playing it safe, I just wanted to end it in 3 games. That was like my thoughts going into it. And I just whipped out a Kled game. The first game, I saw Milk level up and I was like, oh, it's over. And I hit 3 Kleds in my first shop and I was like, oh, I'm Kledge. And then I just like sold everything, made 20. And then what was really sad was that first game, I actually lost by 2 HP. And if I had gone second the first game, I probably could have checkmated on the third game, because I would have had 8 points in game 1. And then in game 2, I just got really lucky. I hit Vel'Koz 3 out of nowhere. I hit 2 Vel'Kozes in one shop and just insta-nicoed. And the second game was just like a free first. And then I could have been 18 points, but that was unfortunate. And then in game 3, I just played like a top 4 comp, because all I needed was 2 points to get in the checkmate, the checkpoint. And then it was between me and Kiddix. And then in the fourth game, I played first or eighth. I think a lot of people saw I had double Nico on the bench. And I could have easily double Nico'd a Gwen to just play for top four, but
I remember that.
Yeah. I'm not a bitch, so I just like I was like, first or eighth, like I'm ending the tournament here and I'm gonna win Worlds. And I was like, screw the money, I'm gonna hold these Nicos and I'm going for Karma 3. So I ended up dying lit with 2 Nicos on the bench. I think I was 2 Karmas off Karma 3.
Yeah. So I remember you rolling, and I feel like I remember you had a good amount to roll, and it just didn't pop up.
Yeah, I hit Garen 2 and Karma 2 in one shop, and then the next round, I had to verse Hwanmi's board when he just hit a Tome, and he had just hit Riven 3. So I was on the wrong side, and then I just took I just took 20 from him. And I was like, oh no. And I was just praying the whole time that I would hit Karma 3. And then in game 5, was there a game 5? Oh, there was. Yeah, there was a game 5.
Yeah.
In game 5, I actually thought I had a really strong board. Like, I was uncontested Vel'Koz, and I saw my spot, and I was like, all right, this is a free like top 4. If I get lucky, I could probably let either Mbappe, Nukumaru, or Zijing Che win. but I think Mbappe and Nukumari went fast eighth in the in the last game. So like, because they those two plus Xi Jingche were the only ones that could keep the tournament going, but then they all got knocked out. And then I see Huanmi hit that insane Legionnaire board. I saw Chedux roll like 10 gold and hit Akshan 2. I saw Milk get a tome. And I was just like, oh, this game is like, this game's just a BG. Like, everyone's high rolling out of their minds. Shurikane's board was cracked. I think that last game, game 5, was the strongest lobby I've ever played in my life. I've actually never seen a stronger lobby. And I think I went out 5th to Kidix's Ghost. Mm-hmm. And then there I just knew, like, oh, Worlds is over. Because honestly, Xi Jingche's boards were just like okay businesses. His boards were just not strong enough. And then he was actually in the top 4, but he had no chance of winning the lobby. So at that point, I was just like, oh, it's my Worlds run is over. And then Milk went 6th, and we held hands. It was pretty sad.
Badge.
Well, the good news is that because of your performance, Oceania performed better than every other region in the world, literally. So you might not have won Worlds, but you are single-handedly stronger than like every other region. So that's at least you've got that there. Like Esha greater than EU, NA, KR, Japan, China. So there's no, that.
15th and 16th? Is that, am I reading this right? Oh, no.
That's your average placement in Worlds, like overall. Not in a lobby, yeah, because you obviously can't take worse than 8th in a lobby. But like, yeah, Korea second from the bottom, too. That was, you know, for a region that won Worlds last year and looked, or last set rather, and looked super strong. They did not look as strong this time. Although that one day 4, like we talked about, that super close day. Like if Dudu had made the final lobby, I think there would have been a decent performance there. But either way, Oceania, apparently the greatest region in TFT by virtue of average placement right now.
Yes, agreed. I think China has put on a really good showing. I think, you know, specifically they proved that, you know, they are worth the hype. You know, going into regionals, like watching them play, there were just so many moments that I felt like when I was watching, I said to myself, okay, I'm not like that scared of China. Like, there's definitely some moments where they do some really cool stuff, but it looks like they're fallible, right? They're like super beatable. And after Worlds, just like next Worlds, I'm gonna be so afraid of the Chinese players. And it almost feels like inevitable because their qualification system is so ruthless. There's so many players and so many tournaments that if you get through it, there's just no way you're like a weak player unless you're just the biggest high roller of all time. It's just like, it's just impossible based off the odds. Unless the entire player base sucks, which is just not true. So I think China is going to continue to have a strong results Worlds after Worlds.
It was kind of amazing to see Huanmi like come back again, right? Because like making it to multiple Worlds in a row is just amazing. So cool story on his side of things too, to make it back and then win it all as well. But let's move on. Let's leave set 5 Worlds in the past. And let's get to a tier list. And this one's a special one. It's Esha's Oceania player tier list. So, you know, you might have to explain these players a little bit more than like our NA representatives have to sometimes, because people might not be quite as familiar with the scene down there. Like, we know you, we know Raza. There's maybe a few others, but like there are some unknowns in that region. So I'm curious. You know how it works, basically. Pick players, you can move them up, you can move them down. Just because you name someone doesn't mean they're locked in the position you put them in first. So go at it. Who are your top 10?
Okay, so just starting things off, like the obvious one, Esha, I think.
Heard of him, yeah.
After that Worlds performance, he's got to be number one. That guy, he's a great player. He's a beast. Right.
Obviously. If you didn't put yourself number one,
I heard he's single, looking for a duo partner.
Heard he's single too.
That's right. Okay, it's dating.
So the thing is, like, these OCE players, half of them are like tournament monsters, and then half of them are like ladder monsters. So like, I'm just gonna like put those two together. By the way, do I put C players in this list, or do I just do OC strictly?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I can do C players?
I think
C doesn't have their own official like region. Yeah. So you can adopt them if you want. We're officially adopting SEA into OCE.
I think that's fine.
Right. Well, second has to be Jose. I think he's one of the highest potential players in probably the world. I think He's really good in tournaments. He's really, really good on ladder. He's been rank one consistently. Every single set on OCE, he holds that rank one for months. And I think if I see him on the world stage, he will perform.
He has to get more chances.
Yeah.
He's been really good in the tournaments I've seen him in.
Yeah. Especially Fight Night. He's been in Fight Night for like 10 weeks or something. He's like
until Brodan competed in Fight Night and beat Jose Paulo. It's true. I took his third place spot.
Wow. The Oceania SEA Slayer.
Put a third player, it would probably be Angora. Angora is like, he's just one of the, I didn't really know much about him in like set two, set three, but he kind of like popped off in like set four and five. I always saw him at the top of the ladder. I didn't know who he was until I like started talking to him. He was the one that actually coached me on like Vel'Koz positioning. And like the way he like talks about positioning is like, it's really insane. He's a very, he's a beast when it comes to positioning. And just like executing comps perfectly. And he is kind of like he plays really well in tournaments, and right now he's rank one in OCE.
I'll check the spelling since our producer is asking for it.
Yeah, the spelling's that's the spelling. In fourth, I'd probably put Chunga.
Chunga
is he was actually like probably one of the favorites to win OCE regionals, and unfortunately, like some games like he got kind of unlucky, and there was actually a point at regionals where he actually disconnected in one of the stages. Ugh. And I think that might have cost him a placement, but Chunga is definitely. He's one of the strongest, like, one-trick, two-trick players. So if you, like, want to learn how to play, like, in set four, he was, like, the keeper's god. In set five, he was the Vel'Koz god. He's a really, really strong player. In fifth, I'd probably put... I'd probably put Chubby Bunny. He's like he's consistent, always at the top of the ladder. 20 performances are like average, but all I can really go off right now is like solo queue, because there aren't that many tournaments in OCE. There's only like one or two, but I think Chubby's a very consistent player. In sixth, I'm probably putting Razza.
All right, there he is.
Yeah, there he is.
Where you would go on this?
So you guys will probably know Razza. Razza was last year's world's representative for OCE. I think the biggest issue with Razza, why I don't rate him higher, is he's a tournament beast. He's probably like one of the best tournament players, but he's not a very like good solo queue player.
Okay,
he loves rerolls like, too much.
Yeah, I think like. Sometimes, like, he gets a bit off track, plays for fun, and then he, like, loses LP. But then, like, when he's actually trying, like, he's a really strong player. In seventh, I'd probably put Fishbowl. So Fishbowl is kind of a, he's kind of like a, he used to be really, really, really strong in set three and four. He was the, he was the top player of... He was, like, the scariest player to play against in solo queue. But he hasn't played... He quit set 5. It's Fishbowl.
Fishball? Like, B-A-L-L?
Fishbowl.
Not bowl. Not, like...
It did kind of sound like... Okay.
Fishbowl. But, yeah, he was also really high-ranked in set 3 in NA as well. I think he was, like, very up there. But I think... Yeah, if he comes back to TFT in set 6, he is probably going to be one of the strongest players. In 8th, I'd probably put Gidoff. This one might be a bit controversial, but he is known as the Mii Mech guy. He's the guy that started all the Mii Mech, no scout, no pivot.
Yeah.
I just know that if he finds a comp, he's like the milk of OCE. Like, he'll find one comp, and he'll execute that comp to perfection. He'll play it over and over again. He honestly was one of the scariest players in set 3. He actually hit rank 3 on the NA server, and his name was Mimek. Wow. And he held that for a bit.
Oh, so, that's him. Okay, I remember.
Yeah, that was yeah. him. That was Mimek.
Cool. Okay. Wow, that's amazing. I like it.
Yep. In ninth place. Oh, I forgot about Kajaus. I'll put Kajaus as ninth, but I'll probably move him up.
That's okay.
So, yeah.
I like that. That's just typing how to spell it in chat.
What a great guest.
Yeah. Kajaus, he's one of he's like the Luigi to Jose's Mario. They're like the brothers. They're like, they always hold rank 1 and 2 in OCE.
I always
they're
see
like they're like the solo queue beasts. Like, you see them in your lobby, you're just like, oh, I'm screwed. Well, in 10th place, it's probably gonna be Keen.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
really good.
Keen is like he doesn't really play that much in OCE, but I think he's a really, really strong player, but it's just I think he in tournament, like, I don't know what happens. He just plays too flexibly, which I think whoa. Give me one second.
Doesn't like your tier list. Well, we have to finish this one now.
I guess Esha's pup is a Keen fan.
Apparently, yeah.
Like a longtime Keen sub.
How dare you insult Keen in front of your dog? Clearly does not like it.
Yeah, Keen's a really strong player, but I wouldn't rate him like in definitely like the top 9 against these players.
Okay.
Just because of like his tournament performances.
Can you explain a little bit of that?
Sorry?
Can you explain why playing too flexibly is a weakness for Keen?
So Keen is probably known as like not a forefun streamer, but he's very interesting to watch. He pulls out like really, really weird comps out of nowhere from like certain situations. But I think that like he gets too creative. I think creative is the best like way to describe Keen. He gets too creative in tournaments, and then he ends up playing like subpar comps in tournaments, and that leads to like his like bot fours. Whereas if he just played like, you know, just like a meta, like boring bench comp, he probably could have top four the lobby from his spot. Because I see him make like insane pivots from spots where he could have just easily played like a top four. And I think non-flexible gameplay is more rewarding, especially in a tournament.
Right.
When you only have Keen is like the opposite of that.
Yeah, I agree. Very much so. Speaking as a person that tries to do it and it doesn't work.
Because like, yeah, sometimes you get really dizzy and then like, you know, you get off track, lose like 3 rounds for no reason. Whereas if you just play a certain comp every single game, like you never get lost, you know what you're doing, and then yeah, like you know your outs and all that.
It's true. It feels the same on ladder too. Like if you're playing super flexible, you do get dizzy sometimes. Whereas like there was a time when I only played Star Guardians every single game, and then I was like, all right, I know exactly what I'm trying to do, you know. And then like sometimes you have games where it's like, all right, I just didn't get it. Other times you high roll. Other times you just get to play around it well and be creative. But yeah.
All right. So you said you want to move Kajaus up.
Yeah.
But if you, outside of that, I feel like the list is pretty much done, yeah?
Yep, I'm down to move Kajaus to 4th.
Wow, okay. That's a long
way. I rate these C players very, very highly. Like, they're really, really strong players, and I feel like there's so much talent in C, and I'd really like to see them on the world stage. I think they would pop off.
I agree. I just want, I think, like, if anything, Worlds has taught us that there's just some regions that don't get the spotlight because of whatever reason, right? Like maybe they don't have a lot of popular streamers, or maybe they just don't get many chances in general. But I would love to see more opportunities for all kinds of different regions for sure.
That's awesome. And I guess it all makes him closer to the Luigi, metaphor as well. He has to be closer to Mario, yeah. But he's also like very Luigi in that you totally forgot about him for most of the tier list. And they're like, oh yeah, he exists. It's also very Luigi. It's all right. It just makes the metaphor even better, you know? It's very accurate. All right, well, there you go. Oceania tier list. Cool. I don't think we've ever had one on the... have we had one on the show before? Maybe like once a long time ago. I don't think so, though.
I mean, this is the first time we've done a player tier list like this, and I think there's a lot of value in doing something for like a non-North American region, because it's like really important that we start getting like names out there, right? Because now, whenever someone who watches the stream here and say, oh, like, I didn't know that, you know, Jose and Kajas was like so rated highly by Esha, someone I respect, then they see him in tournaments. It really helps like tie that together. Plus, it makes Esha look like a genius, because if Kajas like becomes like a world champion, you know, and then you heard it here first, right? Like, this guy's like, he's super sick. Like, he deserves to have a spot on the world stage. So this is why we do it, because someone has to name it for the first time, and this is where it happens.
Very true. All right, sick tier list. Now it's time to move on to the mailbag. And so while this is happening, while we're talking about this one, also keep an eye on chat, Esha, and find a question you like there, and that person will get a $10 gift card as well. So simultaneously answer a question and watch chat. It's going to be exciting. So this kind of covers a little bit about what we talked earlier, but maybe there's a little bit more insight when it's talking about looking ahead. You played well at Worlds, that you made Oceania. I have to move my window. Proud. Oh, okay. I assumed they were saying that. What did your preparation look like going into the event with so much time between regionals and Worlds? And what are you taking out of this experience to help you in future TFT tournaments? From our question winner, Asian Gucci Squad.
The thing is, I kind of like, you know, like when you do assignments, you try to like leave everything to the last minute. I didn't want to like
me.
I didn't want to like burn that. I didn't want to burn myself out between regionals and Worlds, because the thing is, I realized that there's no point really practicing on a patch that isn't Worlds. So after winning regionals, I kind of just like took a break, played some other games, just relaxed, got my mind off TFT, and then once the Worlds patch hit, it was honestly hell. I was playing like 15 solo queue games a day. I was reviewing like 4 hours of all that gameplay. People were like telling me like, oh, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, like you can improve on this. My brain was just like exploding, and it was just like hell every day. I was watching all the regionals of other regions like China. I watched Robin's 11151, saw what he was doing differently, and I just watched my whole life was just TFT until Worlds. I'd be playing TFT, I'd be VOD reviewing TFT, I'd be watching Twitch streams of TFT before I slept, I'd wake up, it'd be TFT again, and it was just that over and over again. But I think the preparation was pretty good, because I talked to the right people. And what am I taking out of this experience? I think the best way to prepare for a big tournament like Worlds is, rather than just like grinding games of like on your own, it should be mainly scrims. You learn the most from scrims, because you learn that tournament tempo is very different to solo queue tempo. Whereas like in solo queue, everyone would like greed, try to play like the fast eight comps. Whereas like in a tournament setting, you got to like play more aggressively, roll on seven more. Don't be as greedy. I learned that from scrims, and it's mainly just VOD reviewing. VOD reviewing was probably the most important thing. You see all the dumb decisions you make once you watch yourself, like, why did I do that? And then, yeah, I think, yeah, that was the most important thing.
Okay.
To prepare, yeah.
Cool. That is interesting. That's what it takes to get to the final lobby of Worlds. Let's see. I know we moved some of the questions over to Discord, too, so you can see those a little bit easier to pick one.
That's right. But, the chat giveaway question.
Yeah. While you pick that, there is one little topic that we haven't talked about that chat brought up that I do want to talk about. And that's a new scouting mechanic, where when you're scouting someone's board, your little legend appears on their board and can run around. I love it. I think it's awesome. I think it's entertaining. And I think it does kind of change the dynamic of scouting a little bit when someone knows that you're looking at their board and when you know other people are looking at your board. It'll be a lot of fun to watch in tournaments, but I think it'll also make people think differently too. So I want your thoughts on that, Frodan, and then I actually want your thoughts too, Escher, real quick, and then we can go to that last question. That is an important topic, so I didn't want to let it go.
I think it's really fun when you meet somebody that you know. So, for example, today I was queuing, and for some reason, Yubin was just like in every single lobby that I played, like six lobbies in a row. And me and him just kept trolling each other half the time. We're like, I know he was like in the middle of a roll down, and I'm not because I'm greeting and I'm skipping 4-1 or whatever. So I like appear on his thing and I'm dancing around as a little legend and emoting him the whole time. Or like if after the round's over, everyone goes to look at the stimmy, right? And you see like all six other people in the lobby with you looking at this other player watching to get the stimmy. It was almost like a Fortnite moment. You know how Fortnite has their concerts like in game and everyone's avatar is like there jumping around. That's kind of what it feels like when everyone's looking at the stimmy at the same time, when the open forwarder reroll Tristana player or something is trying to get their radiant blessing. So it's pretty fun.
That's great. I love it. I think it's awesome. Escher, what do you think of it?
Sorry, what was the question? I was like reading the questions and I just...
Oh yeah, that's fine. What do you think of the new scouting mechanic where Little Legend appears on the person's board and distract them?
Okay, so it was really funny. Like, I got in my first game. I was playing on OCE. And the moment I got into a lobby, I just saw seven people on my board, all just like spamming their emotes. And I was like, oh God, this is bad. Like, I started lagging. Like, I was just like, oh, this is going to be really bad. I was just like, this has to be the worst mechanic ever made. And then I just realized it's like, it's just all fun, you know?
Yeah.
But then there was one thing I realized is that if you play Squink, if you press Control F1 or F2, you can actually spam that the thing with the squink, like
I know the one you're talking about.
Octagon. Yeah. And then if you do that on their items, they can't see their items. So if you really want to grief someone, you can just go sit on top of their items and just start spamming your emotes. So I think they might need to do something about that. Like,
dude,
it'll be really bad for streamers.
The surfer, like the lifeguard chunk, you could like surf on their item thing. That's like a huge animation too. Yeah.
There's so many bugs with it right now that it's very frustrating. Like today, I remember like Soju was playing Sin to test out the new Nocturne buffs and he couldn't reposition because it was lagging and it didn't load his screen. And so he couldn't actually reposition his Nocturne and then he just had the worst possible positioning. And so it's just like, this kind of stuff is like, I mean, again, it's not like a serious patch, right? Like, so if you're going to compete on it, like, obviously do it at your own risk. But I do find it like kind of humorous, but also pretty frustrating. Like, you know, the whole point of doing this on PB is to flesh it out, you know? And if there's a lot of bugs on it, then even if it's supposed to be a fun patch, it's going to get ruined by, you know, game-breaking bugs.
Wow. Also, like, one thing I thought that was really funny was like when people scout the stimmy, The guy with the stimmy just acts like a rat and he just doesn't pick it up. And he just sees seven people on his board waiting for him to pick up the stimmy. And he just, the round starts and then he picks it up. And I just thought that was so funny.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to a lot of games with this. It'll be fun. But let's move on to chat question. So this was selected by you from chat. Congratulations to Comely Apple. How did your family react to your Worlds qualification and placement?
Well, my mom, I was actually really like depressed and sad after, I went fifth. I really wanted to win. As you could see, like, I didn't really care about the money. The only thing I wanted was the victory.
Yeah.
So I was pretty depressed. And then my mom came downstairs and then like, she gave me a hug and then she was like, you know, you played well. And then like, I couldn't stop crying for like 10 minutes straight. It was really, it was really heartwarming. And after I calmed down a bit, she asked me, you know, like, wow, you won $15,000. Are you going to buy me a handbag? And I was just like, no. Like, no, the handbags are like $6,000. You're going to take like half my earnings that I barely earned from TFT. Like, I'll buy you like a cheap one, but not like an expensive one.
Knockoffs.
It's good to have priorities, you know?
Yeah. And then my sister called me. She was like, I watched the whole thing. You know, I have no idea what's going on, but you know, you played well. You know, like at least like your stream's gonna pop off now. Like other people are gonna find you. And then she tried to cheer me up, and I was just like crying while calling her. And then my dad called me, and then he sends me a screenshot of he actually put on his Instagram like, "Oh, I'm proud of my son."
Wow. Oh wow.
Like he put like the world standings, and I realized at the top right corner he was watching Soju's stream. And then he was like, "Wait, this Soju?" Like he tells me like, "Oh, this Soju guy's kind of funny," and I was like, "Wait, what about me?" And then he's like, "Yeah, you know." And then, you know, he was like, "Congrats on the 15K. You know,
where's my handbag?"
Yeah, he was like, "Oh, when are you gonna buy me dinner once COVID ends?" Like, you're shouting me dinner. And then all my rat friends, like my IRL friends, instead of like cheering me off, saying like, you know, it's okay, they were all just like, "Yo, when are you buying us dinner? Like, you gotta buy us dinner ASAP." And I was like, wow.
That's what happens when you get rich and famous. This is just, you know, wow.
They only care about,
you know,
the money.
They just keep taking and taking. It's just the beginning. Just the beginning.
They got it. You're still Esha from the block. They got to understand. Yeah. All right. Well, that was great. That was a great question. A great answer. And that brings us to the end of the first part of the show. We're going to let Esha go, and then we're going to do the award show. But before we do, Esha, thanks so much for coming on the show, being a guest, being a really fun guest to chat with. Any final shout-outs, thoughts, words, messages you want to deliver to the TFT community before you go?
Just shout-out to like everyone that supported me through Worlds, all the new people that started coming to my stream after Worlds. Yeah, I just really appreciate all the support that everyone has given me. And shout out to Giant Slayer TFT. Also, shout out to the casters. You know, you guys killed it on the world stage. You guys actually made it really fun to watch. Like mid game, like during the games, I had your casting like open on the other screen. And I think you guys did a really great job. And shout out to Giant Slayer for, you know, putting OC, like not OC, TFT out there, and trying like your best to make it more public and well known to other people.
Esha confirmed watching the stream while competing. Cool. Casually stream sniping during World. It doesn't matter at all.
But everybody knows everything in TFT. It's fine. Yeah. Well, that's great. Thanks for coming on the show. It's been a ton of fun. We'll get Frodan's thoughts, final thoughts later after the award show is done. But that is it. We're going to take a quick 30-second or so break, and we will be back with the Golden Spatula Award, celebrating the best and like best of
worst
set of five, the best and worst, the best and not so best. I want to be nice about it. Frodan's going in hard already. So don't go anywhere. That's going to be pretty fun. It's going to be pretty crazy. We'll be right back with that. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. It's time again. That's a nice t-shirt. See, if you combined your t-shirt and my suit, we can make like one whole suit looking thing almost. My top hat off of Amazon is way too big for my head, by the way. But I have a small head, so take that for what you will. It's the Golden Spatula Awards. That's right. Set 5 is done. It's time to celebrate it. It's time to give out some awards. Frodan, are you ready?
Yes, I am very ready, Doa. Let's do it.
All right, I think you're giving out the first award, so have at it.
That's right. So we kick things off very nice and simple. We have the Some Sins Award, named after the very popular composition that took every high ELO streamer and competitive player's heart by storm in set 2, Rise of Elements, after Summoner and Assassins, for the best design comp. This one, we're going to start off with the honorable mention we give as a runner-up to Coven. Coven brought a lot of interesting nuance to positioning and how you really want to prioritize the Coven leader to be able to get the extra mana and buffs. And while some units were able to utilize the buffs better than others and it was a little bit more egregious in terms of balance, it was a really unique way that really put thought-provoking positioning into the game that we thought was really cool just from a design perspective. And the flavor of it, just having the Coven leaders kind of being this vampiric, you know, cabal of some sort, was really, really cool.
Yeah,
but the winner of the Some Sins Award is the Abomination Trait. Now, I know what you're thinking. We've seen a lot of Abom. Why is this so cool? But the reason why is because every single aspect of Abomination was pretty successful in terms of accomplishing what it wanted to do. Every individual unit was someone that can hold an item and carry temporarily. They could also be the carries of the composition. Some people decide to throw away their World Championship qualifier spot by putting an Assassin Emblem onto their Callista 3 and trying to make that the carry of Abomination. Scion, the monstrosity itself, could also be someone that you use as a carry for the composition as well. For the flexibility, for the flavor, the design, the positioning, and all the nuance behind it, we give Abomination the Some Sins Award for Set 5.
Beautiful. It is easily my favorite trait. I loved it. I love playing it. I always like the traits that summon big things. It's a good one, for sure.
Yes, right.
All right. Next award. We're ready. Well, this one is the Bedge Award, is what it's called. No, Best Design Champ Award. My bad.
Oh, spoilers.
So, that's right. We'll get there eventually. So every set, there's one champion that stands out. One champion that intrigues you every time you place it on the board. A champ that says, hey, I don't need to be just another shooty person that shoots faster. I'm unique. I raise the skill cap. This set, so let's look at the runner-up first. So the runner-up for best champion set is Lucian. Lucian had a really neat position in the meta in that he could use a lot of different items. He was a very good carry to stabilize with, but also had kind of high roll, high tier possibilities. He did, however, dodge like into the face of the enemy team pretty often, so he didn't get the win. But, you know, pretty solid either way. But the winner of the best design champion of the set is Kindred. That's right. Kindred was so awesome. You had the carry potential in Lamb. You also had the ultimate that she does, keeping your team safe. And then you had Wolf running around, too. You got to think about the placement of two champions instead of one. So that is the winner of best design champ. Whether chat likes it or not, we talked about this together. This is not
a really cool champion. Voted by the panel. We have a panel of people that went
That's
into
true.
It.
That's true. It's not just us.
Some people really liked it. And Kindred obviously was a unit that I think is somewhat deeply missed by a lot of people. So we won't go here debating. This is not the point of the show. Let's go ahead
Have you ever agreed with all the Oscars? Come on. Like, nobody agrees with all this stuff. This is an awards show.
Well, we decided, but this was our very extended agree segment.
Yeah, pretty
our
much.
Our third award is the Mordog Award. It's not about who gets lucky or unlucky, but who adapts, who innovates, who's really able to go above and beyond and show us some things that we didn't expect to see or ever dream of. The honorable mention, I think, will surprise nobody. It is Chug Jug. When people look at Gragas, they look at, you know, the Adonis of a human male, right? The people look
Beautiful
at
body.
Lifetime achievements of what they really want to accomplish with their workout and fitness goals, as well as the amount of testosterone they want to inject into their body. And this man takes it to another level. He decides that at dawn, we chug and you turn him into the carry. And it actually ended up transforming into Chug Bug and realizing that, hey, there's actually a lot more to this comp in general. So for the innovation of being able to turn what should be a filler frontliner for a Dawnbringer trade, being the star of it was really, really special. But the most popular and the most innovative comp has to be, hands down, Bulldozer. Now, Bulldozer was a pretty interesting fusion of a lot of egregious, frustrating mechanics in the game at one point. Primarily the fact that Pantheon just seemed to be unkillable. And so what you would do is you give Pantheon a nice golden shower from Varus, and then he would use his ability to chop down every single thing, and you would never lose, and you would 7-0 every single opponent for the rest of the game. It was a really, really interesting interaction of two different trees that we didn't really see. And just from that alone, from some kind of unique combinations that we didn't expect, Bulldozer has to get the Mordog Award.
Wow. That was something. See, you wrote out your award acceptance speeches. I wrote out the intros to the awards. We kind of did the opposite things in our planning, didn't we?
I'm doing this off the fly though.
Oh really? Wow, that's amazing. You're even more talented than I expected. let's move on to the next one. This is the one that the previously mentioned Bedge Award. This is the award for the worst meta. Let's be honest. TFT is about skill. Most of the time. Sometimes it's about playing an unreasonably OP comp, a comp that makes you one-shot every enemy team like your Faker, but without the talent. These comps are patched quickly, but leave lasting memories. The runner-up for the Bedge Award is any and all verticals. There was a point in set 5, I don't know if you remember, Frodan, there was a point in set 5 where basically you just kind of picked a line and you just went there. You just like saw what you 2-starred in stage 2, and you just were like, all right, I'm Forgotten, I'm Skirmisher, I'm Radiant, or not Radiant, I'm, you know, whatever, Redeemed.
Redeemed, just kind of went around with it. Yeah. Nightbringers.
Exactly. There wasn't a lot of adaptation. There wasn't a lot of splashing of anything. It was just verticals all day, every day. But that's not the winner. No, no. The winner of the Bedge Award, the worst meta, is Shadow Blue Bluff, blah, 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 Shadow Blue Buff LeBlanc Reroll. That's really hard to say. Shadow Blue Bluff LeBlanc Reroll. Shadow Blue Bluff LeBlanc Reroll. Yeah, it was bad.
Not a new cast warm-up.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I need to do more, apparently.
It was egregious. How could they let any of this through R&D? The fact that LeBlanc would be able to perma-stun and crit every single time she casted her 2 chains. You know, it was definitely one of the worst meta that I heard was actually, like, damaging the player base actively. And while some people were able to climb really high with it, it was not missed whatsoever.
That's right, and we will not miss it. Let's move on to the next award.
All right, the next award is the Best Little Legend. These are the only ways that we can monetize TFT, so while Riot didn't pay us and put us up to do it, we feel obligated to promote their cosmetics so that TFT can actually go beyond set 6, because the game needs to make money somehow, because they are a business company after all. So let's go ahead and get this over with. The honorable mention goes to Chaos and Order Penguins, because do we remember any other Little Legends? And the winner of this has to go with the most pay-to-win aspect of TFT ever, which is Earth Dowsy. I have still yet to get my own Dowsy skin. I've spent infinite money, expense it all to Twitch, don't tell my boss, and yet I still not have any Dowsies in my account. They still believe that I used my expenses because I needed to justify my involvement in Twitch Rivals for putting on that Twitch Rivals event. Don't tell them that. And I'm going to delete the VOD afterwards. Next award.
All right. Well, we'll move quickly past that for legal implications. You know, Frodan, we have to give out an award called the 1v9 Award. And my description for this one starts out very familiarly. TFT is about skill. Most of the time. Sometimes it's about picking a single champ that can stomp the other team and then typing GG easy when people anger ping you. So the winner, oh no, let's look at the runner-up, actually, for the 1v9 time. It's actually Trundle. There was a point where hilarious clips were coming out via lots of streamers like Soju of Star 1 Trundle taking on basically everybody. Trundle 1 was like the strongest champion in the game for like a little while, so that was amazing. But there's one that exceeded that. The ultimate 1v9 award in set 5 ends up going to Mordekaiser. And I am shocked, frankly, Frodan, that it took people that long to realize how good Mordekaiser won. Day 1 of the PBE, I was in there putting AP on him, sometimes tanky items on him, and he just one-shot everything. It was so easy. I don't know why people took so long to figure it out. But when they did, it was oppressive. It was hard to deal with. It got patched eventually, but it was a memorable, memorable moment.
Yes, when Mordekaiser won with just one Shadow Quicksilver would be able to 1v9 your entire team because he would heal infinitely due to his regeneration. It was absolutely egregious. And as much as people can talk about like Akshon currently or, you know, even some of the more powerful moments. Mordekaiser was there. You know, shout out to Ryze with Shadow Blue Buff as well. That also almost made this cut. But Mordekaiser had to set up it more, though. Absolutely, without a doubt.
All right, next award.
We're just blazing through. Next award, we haven't named it yet, but we want to... What's a good podcast and show in Hollywood without a little bit of public masturbation? The Best Team Fight Talk Show Episode Award. This one, we're going to give an honorable mention to episode 27 featuring Mortdog and Whitrock. Mortdog has to be named for an award because he gets bullied a lot on the internet. So we're gonna give this honorable mention to them, but he can't win because he won last time. Instead, the episode winner, this one, goes to episode 36, featuring Soju and Precedent with special guest Bryce Blum, which leading to some really fun back and forth between Michael and P-God, as well as some bets that certainly didn't happen. It was just an episode that was one to remember. If you missed it, you missed out big. And if you, we still have the VODs, thankfully. We're not going to delete that one, unlike this one.
All right, you can go back and watch it right after this. Yeah. All right.
I'm so excited to be accepting this award on behalf of everyone who participated in the show. I want to thank Giant Slayer for their amazing production work, as always. I want to thank Frodan for being the best co-host anyone could possibly ask for. I want to thank P-God for carrying Soju so hard in the duo's tourney they got invited on the show in the first place. And last but not least, I want to thank the man, the myth, the legend himself, Soju. If he didn't have so many bad opinions, I wouldn't have been able to so thoroughly out-argue and out-draft him on the show. Stay free, Soju.
Wow. Chat says that they missed it. Oh, you missed it. Can we play it again? One more time, but this time possible? Louder for the people in the back?
One more time with feeling.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, all right. We can't do it. Video can get.
The important thing is he said, stay free, Soju, at the end. I think that was the main message.
He said, shout out to Soju, because if you didn't have so many bad takes, then I wouldn't have won such a free bet. Stay free, Soju.
There you go.
Let's move on.
Our next one. That's right. It's the Player Differential Award. The best play from set 5, because you know what, Frodan? Some players are just built different. They make plays that dazzle the senses and stimulate the mind. They're clutch. They can take a single round and make it look so artistic that you could put a screenshot of it in the Louvre right next to the bathrooms. It's still in the Louvre, though, so that's impressive. The winner of the set 5, or the runner-up, rather, of the set 5 Player Differential Award is going to be Soju Zephyr Cycling from the NA Regional Finals. It was pretty epic of it, actually, He was able to move Zephyr's round, nail the right champion on their side every single time for, like, what, 4 or 5 rounds or something like that? It was long.
Yes, yeah. It was the most locked in we'd seen Soju. He joked about peak form. And, you know, part of the reason why it felt really impressive was because there were such high expectations on Soju in particular after trash talking so much. And he was able to deliver big with some pretty clean micro that really showed that, yes, indeed, this man was playing very close to peak form, which I think we were all impressed. But that wasn't the winner, though, was it?
No, it wasn't. The winner of the Player Differential Award for Set 5 is Spencer's 5-turn Draconic Egg to qualify for Worlds. And Spencer himself has a message for us as he accepts this award.
And this board from Spencer, trying to piece together. What was that package? 2 Nikos and a bunch of components.
What did we just witness? Please find a legendary carry.
He has it on his bench. Heimerdinger.
He has it, but we don't like Heimerdinger. It's not that good right now. I want to play a Teemo, Dan.
2-star Heimerdinger, or in this case, 2-star Garen? Okay.
Okay. He's one off the call.
There you go. That was great
acceptance speech from Spencer. It turned out it was Frodan and Bryce casting. And incorrectly guessing what he should be Nikoing at that point.
Well, there you go. Congratulations to Spencer.
Yes. Next award. And while some people might look at this moment and think, oh, it was just variance, right? It was the fact that Spencer recognized what he needed to do. And a lot of times, the hardest things to be able to achieve in a game of high variance is playing towards your very narrow outs and being rewarded for it. And Spencer executed flawlessly because he won out from this point on. And by the hair of his chinny chin chin, able to outscore Pokegon to qualify for the World Championships. And a lot of people wouldn't be able to go and have the audacity to do something like that. They would take a little bit more of a safer line of play and, you know, maybe not have qualified, maybe narrowly missed, and then start talking about how, you know, that variance really screwed them, or they didn't really have an opportunity to do anything different. Spencer's a player that's so exciting to watch, and this is one of the many reasons why.
Yeah. Well, next award.
The next award goes to the breakout talent of the set. This is an award for casters, because, you know, see above earlier note about public masturbation. Let's talk a little bit about our honorable mention, Mr. Nathan. That's Admirable Zamora. Admirable has reached Challenger this set, joining the TFT crew pretty late. He's asserted himself, and he honestly brings a lot of really powerful energy to the broadcast, and he's very technically sound. Honestly, I like Nathan a lot. He's hosted the past couple of shows while Doe was gone, and I look forward to seeing casting with him in set 6. And of course, he's near and dear to my heart because we're both coming from Hearthstone. But the winner of it has to be the newest and freshest face to the scene, the host that everyone knows and love. Necra is our winner for Breakout Talent of the Set. We haven't really had a dedicated host yet in TFT, and she really takes it on, and she really fits the vibe too. You know, TFT is a little bit whimsical, a little silly, a little fun. And let me tell you something, Necra also puts in the work. And so in terms of her abilities, her talent, her work ethic, and what she's really offered and brought to the scene, we welcome Necra fully to TFT, and we can't wait to see Sex 6 and beyond having her host all of our events.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more.
Starting off with the NA Regional Finals in set 4.5, I could have never imagined that my stay and Teamfight Tactics would go the way that it has. I want to thank Giant Slayer TFT for giving me this opportunity and this sweet award, as well as the incredible casters that I have been able to work with through all of these shows that have just made my job so much easier. And last but not least, thanking you, the community, for being so welcoming and just making Teamfight Tactics feel like such a home. Thank you so much.
There you go. Congratulations to Necra. And it's cool, too. I think this is an important award because, you know, we want more people to come up and be a part of TFT, not just as players, but also as content makers and then talent on broadcast. So this was one that we definitely want to include, and it's cool. Yeah,
that's right.
Let's move on to our next award. This is the award for the best sidekick in TFT because Frodan, every hero needs support, someone who's got their back no matter what happens in game or in Reddit comments, someone who you can count on because a partnership is stronger than the individual. So the runner up for best sidekick is going to be Soju, who is Precedent's sidekick for the Giant Slayer series. He did a great job of being there, providing emotional support and, you know, a point or two. But mostly the emotional support, I think, in the end. Yeah, pretty much. But the winner of the best sidekick in set 5 is none other than Riot's own Kent Wu. That's right in the Mort Talk videos. That image. Like, he was there. He was giving us the information. He was helping Mort Talk disseminate important stuff about TFT, about the patches. He had the reasons. He had the why fors. He had the whos. He had the whats. He had the wheres. And he helped Mort Dog give us all the information we needed. So there you go. Congratulations, Kent Wu.
Hello. Thank you so much to Giant Slayer for awarding me with this Best Sidekick Award. It's super cool to be able to receive this award. I also want to say thank you to Mort Dog for trusting me with being his sidekick and teaching me all the ways of TFT balance. And also shout out to everyone on the TFT team because there's a ton of people working really hard behind the scenes to make the game as great as it is. Just thank you again to Giant Slayer because everything you do for the community, everything you put on, like, it's really amazing. And honestly, the community wouldn't be the same without you. So thank you so much.
Amazing image to start that off.
It is great. And Kent really puts in the work too, you know. I think he's like 1100 LP. Like, he's definitely no slouch. He always is soliciting feedback and handles it. And let me tell you, when you're soliciting feedback from EU players in particular, you have something else coming towards you when it comes to TFT EU players, because they are mad. So Kent, shout out to you. You did awesome this set. I'm looking forward to the future of TFT with you in it.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the next award.
This award is the breakout player of the set. Kind of like a rookie of the year, but we don't really have a year. It's kind of a set. And also, some players who might be familiar / unfamiliar, but mostly on the familiar side. This honorable mention, it's a little bit of a controversial one, largely because it's not really this set in particular. But towards the end of Fates going into Reckoning, how could we not talk about Ramkev, the Udyr 3 Whisperer, the man, the myth, the legend, the king of the ramen. Ramkev started off his face championship, by being able to get to the very last day in the finals and be able to do really well. And we weren't really sure if he was just going to be kind of a flash in the pan and move on with his life, like so many other TFT players claimed that they would do, but ultimately come back after they quit for about a month. Ramkev instead decided to say, hey, look, the Reckoning Mid-Set finale is coming up, and I am going to land number one by a landslide and then hold number one until today, where Casper Wu, I think, finally overtook him for about 10 minutes until Ramkev started to put his pony up and start to actually climb again. Ramkev is a very special talent, and honestly, it wouldn't surprise me at all in a few sets that we start talking about Ramkev as the best player in TFT, period. The man has a work ethic, he has the brain, and honestly, he's got such a charming smile. I've never seen Ramkev smile in the front camera like this, so well done. Well done.
He's a happy guy on stream. Yeah.
He's so hot right now. All right, the winner of this, though, he's not the winner of the breakout player that says, sorry, I got lost in the
game. Ramkev love was intense.
Has to go to Pokigum. Pokigum in set five in particular, coming off the Challenges Series win. We weren't really sure what to expect because when people went through those qualifiers, sometimes you don't know if they're going to be able to keep it up. But man, does this guy really put in the work. And what really makes Pokigum so fun to watch is his creativity. I already kind of gave him a little bit of flame at the beginning of this awards, saying that he actually did throw away his Worlds qualification spot by doing some really weird and innovative things. But he has such a brain and knack for TFT, and he is very good at doing everything both on ladder and in tournament. And this man, I really hope, does well in set six. And I honestly, I really believe that Pokigum has what it takes to be one of the best players in Teamfight Tactics.
Hey, Poki here. Thanks for choosing me for this award. I really appreciate all of the recognition and support that I've been receiving recently, and it's just been a great feeling. I'd like to thank a few people, first of whom are Melton Heart and Void Sins, since they've been playing TFT with me since set one. And we talk about the game a lot, we play together a lot, and I really wouldn't be as good as I am now without them. Next, I would like to thank Rue and Yubin, because those two have been very important for me in getting involved with the community and really enjoy streaming. But lastly, I'd like to extend my thanks to all of you, everyone in the TFT community, because honestly, it's been a blast just getting to know everyone and just seeing all the work that everyone puts in to make sure our game is great. Thanks, love you all, and see you next set.
That we'll take that as a promise, Pokigum. Can't wait, and can't wait to see what the golf club whips up next.
I'm glad he's staying hydrated too. There's a lot of water balls in the background. Hydration is important. But Frodan, we come to it now. Final award, perhaps some might say the most important award, the player of the set. This player has to be at the top of their game from start to finish, to a high level of consistent play on the ladder and tournaments. They represent the best of what Teamfight Tactics has to offer in terms of adaptability, knowledge, and skill under pressure. Let's take a look, though, at the runner-up first. The runner-up is Robin Songs. You really can't say enough good stuff about this guy. He quit his job famously to go full-time streaming and playing TFT, and the results speak for themselves. All the way up to that insane performance in the final day of NA Regionals, getting like a ton of firsts and then a fifth just because he felt bad for everybody else in the lobby. Like, I'm sure this player is a player that will continue to move up astronomically in the scene. Wouldn't be surprised to see him get even farther in Worlds next time around. But the winner of the award, player of the set, goes to none other than Delicious Milk. That's right, bringing it back for NA, number third at Worlds, getting us at least a medal. He got us on the podium. and I mean, he's a great player. He's got one of the greatest minds in the game. He knows when to focus on a comp that is going to work in a tournament. He knows when to be adaptable and play flexible. He really does embody, I think, the best of what it takes to play TFT at the highest level. And you know what? NA should be proud of him. The TFT community should be proud of him, and he's our player of the set.
Number one in points going to the mid-set finale. Number two in the region based off the finals there. Of course, not beating Robin, but no one was beating Robin that weekend. Third in the World Championships. This man truly gave it his all in set five. And while he didn't win the entire World Championship, he certainly won the hearts of millions of people. Billions, even, across
billions.
The world.
Yeah. Multiple planets, even. Possible. Yeah. Well, there you have it, Frodan. That is our awards. That is the award show for set five. it's amazing to think that we're already here, right? It seems like we were just doing the award show for set four, but here we are at the end of set five. But we're not done yet. We've got a lot to look forward to, I think, in set six. It's going to be great.
It is going to be great. Set six is coming up. PB is going to be launching pretty soon. And there's going to be a lot of things to look forward to. I'm so excited for it. For my last shout outs, of course, shout out to all of you, just like everyone said. The reason why TFT is so special is because we have so much fun, but we also are really wholesome. And when it comes down to it, we can get really serious and have a good time and talk about things that matter to us as well. Also, I want to say that I'm competing again. Tomorrow, I'll be competing in Fight Night once more because I had to defend the top three that I got last time. So we'll see if I can replicate that. It's on a four fun patch. I've lost 300 LP today. I'm not entirely sure what the hell I'm doing. So come watch me get bodied or help me realize what I'm doing wrong. It's going to be a fun time either way.
All right. Well, best of luck in set six then. You know what? I'm just going to play on the ladder. I don't know if I'm going to complete too much, but you know, maybe someday, who knows? Either way, it's been an amazing set. Thanks to all of you out there for watching Team Fight Talk Show, for participating in the TFT community, for playing the game, for watching the tournaments, for talking on various platforms about strategy and all that kind of good stuff. And like Frodan said, being generally wholesome about it. It can get a little bit divisive sometimes, but I think in general, the thing the TFT community cares the most about is TFT and what it takes to be good at TFT. And that's where all the most fun conversations happen. So please keep doing that. It's been great. Thank you to Riot and Mort and the whole team who make Teamfight Tactics. It's such a great game. It's been a pleasure to cast. It's been a pleasure to get to play and learn more about over the months. And I can't wait for the next set. And thanks to Giant Slayer for putting on this talk show and for putting on so many other tournaments and really being the organization that, and I know we're on a Giant Slayer stream right now, but I'm going to say it anyway, for being the org that elevated TFT competition in North America like to the next level and keeps taking it to that next level each set. So I'm sure that's only going to increase with set six as well. But that's it. That's our award show. That's Giant Slayer Team Fight Talk Show. Thanks for watching, everybody. Thanks to Esha again for being our guest earlier. And we will see you in a couple weeks, ideally with a lot more Set 6 news. Fingers crossed. We'll find out. But see you then. Take care.